It's exactly Sunday in the morning, and I'm really, really excited to launch this new radio show on Eagle FM. And speaking in the studio is Peneambeko Jonas, and I'll be hosting the Ex-Convict Diaries every Sunday. Basically, and I'm sure people are really excited on hearing what are we really expecting when it's come to the new show with the Ex-Convict Diaries. We just want to know the ex-convict stories, what really happened throughout their incarceration journey, what crimes they have committed. You know, when someone has committed a crime, most of the times we want to find out, we want to know, this person can also commit crime, but what exactly have she done? What exactly did he do? And you just be there stuck wondering, oh, I want to know this person, but I'm curious, will they be hiding it from me, or how should I start asking them, or anything related? So with the Ex-Convict Diary program, we'll be wanting to hear real life stories, like the real life stories from the ex-convicts, the kind of crimes they have, that they have committed, their experience in the correctional facilities, like when someone that has been incarcerated for some period of time given, how does it feel to be in correctional facility? How was life? How was it all? And even after they got released, when they are back in the society and whatnot, how does it feel to be back in the society? How does it feel to be back home? What challenges they also faced. Let me say, for example, maybe somebody got incarcerated, got convicted for a certain crime. What was their experience with their family members, the relative? How was the experience? Does the relatives used to go and visit them, bring them food, comfort them? Or what we want to know. We want to know their journey. And even now that they are back in the society, where are they standing? How is their relationship now with the friends or with the family? How is it really going on? Like, we just want to understand. And regarding now, employment, career wise, how are they doing? Are they employed somewhere, fully employed or self-employed, or they are doing businesses? But also, how is the business doing? How are they supporting themselves, like, just to keep life going? Because I know most of the times, unemployment is one of the contributing factors when it comes to crimes. But now that they are back in the society again, how are they keeping up? Who is really, really keeping, what is that one thing that is keeping them busy? And if it's now employment, like, maybe the person is employed in the government sector or private sector. Let me say, for example, there is a position somewhere, a vacant position somewhere, and people are even asked that, once you are accepted, or once you become a successful candidate, you need to submit your criminal record. How do they understand that? How, we just want to know. And I'm sure, you are really excited about this show. You'd want to contribute to it. But today in the studio, I'm in the studio with Miss Paulina Nganekwa. She's a mental health advocate. And we are just going to dive in a discussion that is under 7 key factors, because we want to understand the need and the need of supporting the ex-convicts. Why should we really, really, really support the ex-convicts? We have some of the questions and discussions regarding that, because we just want to hear. And coming from the mental health advocate, we expect more from her, because she understands how it feels to be in that situation. We are also going to dive in the discussion that has to do with crimes reduction and public safety. Like, now us accepting the ex-convicts back in the society and wanting to support them, is this going to reduce crimes in our community, in our society, in our society? Will the public be safe? Is the public safe from the ex-convicts? And another thing, we just want to know the impact on ex-convicts and their families. What impact are we making when we are supporting the ex-convicts, when we are supporting their families? Because believe me, there is a lot going on. You know, when you're supporting someone, you are also having expectations, expecting them to change, expecting them to have a good relationship with their family. But are the families also willing to welcome them back home, to support them mentally, socially, financially? And yeah, so we also have to speak about all of those things, and also the broader community of law enforcement and benefits. You know, now, like, these people are back in the society, right? These people are our brothers, our sisters, our father, mother, grandparents, and grandfathers. Now, the fact that they are released from the correctional facilities, how does the law enforcement feel about this? Us wanting to contribute to their life, us wanting to do something about the ex-convict life transformation, you know, how does that contribute to the law enforcement, you know? And even the community involvement at large, you know, what role does the community play when it comes to a life of an ex-convict? How does that work? So,
as I said it earlier, we are having Miss Paulina in the studio. She's a mental health advocate. But even that, I would like Miss Paulina to introduce herself. Miss Paulina, please welcome in the studio. Can you just tell us a little a bit about yourself?
Okay, thank you so much, Miss Penny, for having me.
Mm-hmm.
Good afternoon, everyone. So, like Miss Penny said, I am Paulina. I'm Paulina Nganekwa, a small girl from Oshia Shemanya Village. I am a teacher by profession, and I am passionate about all things mental health. So, yeah, that's it about me.
We just launched we are just launching the ex-convict diaries today, this Sunday. I want you to tell the audience, how do you feel about the new program show? How does it sound? You know, what do you think about it?
Okay, the ex-convict diaries, it really sounds like, a good program. It sounds like it's going to really impact so many lives, because given that this program is going to cover stories of ex-convicts, their stories of how they found themselves in a place where they got convicted of crimes, the experiences while they were serving, their experiences when they came back in the society, when they're trying to find their foot again and start over or continue from where they left off. I feel like this is really about to be a very good program, because so many of us need awareness on issues pertaining to crimes serving justice for the crimes that are being committed.
Great news! Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of IMBA? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Serving justice for the crimes that are being committed on a daily basis. And it's good that this program is going to shed light on the lives of those people that experience this thing. Not only is it going to help the ex-convict, you know, to find a better place in society, but it's also going to help us other community members that have never committed or that were never convicted, to make sure that we do not find ourselves in such a place, learn from what the convicts went through, and to ensure that we do not find ourselves in such situations. So I think it's a really good initiative.
Amazing.
Launching this program.
Miss Paulina, you being a teacher by profession as well as a mental health advocate, why is important for the society to support ex-convicts after the release? You know, most of the times, you know, we have these people coming from the correctional facilities, and sometimes they are not even ready to be back home because they know the struggle that they have to find in the society again. Maybe can you tell us why is it important for the society to support these people after their release?
Okay. You know, so many times we keep preaching humanity, humanity, be human. And I think we just say it without really understanding the gravity of this stem or the gravity of this concept. Because humanity, you know, is all about understanding others, especially when it is difficult. Understanding others when it's difficult. And, when we are talking about ex-convicts, it is really difficult for one to look at an ex-convict as another human being. But if we claim that we are human and we are for the concept of humanity, then we should be able to look at these people with grace and understand that they are also human just like us. And making mistakes is in our human nature. So it's in our human nature. We should look at them as human beings that just happened to be unfortunate enough to do some wrongs that found them, that got them in such situations, or being convicted and serving prison term. But then also, it is so important for us to support them because we need them to be okay. We need them to be okay for us. I am so big on this belief of Ubuntu, Ubuntu, Gabantu. We are a people by people for people. So if I want to be okay, I do not only take care of myself, but I should also take care of the people around me so that we are all okay. Because if I am not, if I do not make sure that the next person is okay, then them not being okay is going to affect all of us in the end. So we have to support them in hope that they are fully restored when they come back into the society. We need to support them to ensure that they find their foot again, whether job-wise, whether business-wise, whether emotionally-wise. We need to support these people to ensure that they are fully restored. And when they are restored, there is hope for safer and, you know, healthier communities. There is less chances of them recommitting crimes. There is less chances of them just becoming habitual offenders. So it is important for them and for us as a society.
Paulina, while we are still there, I would like you to emphasize, or probably just to give a highlight to the audience too. Maybe you know of some of the challenges or fear that ex-convicts have upon their release. Maybe is there some of the fears that ex-convicts have towards approaching or coming back home? And what will be that maybe?
That's a good question. So when these are people that these are people that have offended, right? The reason why they were taken away from their communities is because they offended. They did something wrong. They offended someone or the law. So the number one fear that they mostly face is the fear of how will the people look at me? How will my family members look at me?
Is that the fear of judgmental or?
The fear of judgment, the fear of being judged, the fear of rejection, the fear of being, you know, prejudiced against. So these people have this fear. For a normal person, there's always that fear of the unknown because you are really not sure whether your people have forgiven you. Let's say, for example, some people have committed crimes whereby they, you know, they perpetrated their loved ones, for example. And when they are coming back, they are supposed to come back to these families where they did wrong. So they will, of course, they will, as a normal human being with emotions and feelings, they will have that fear and those questions. Will my people accept me back? Will my people look at me the same way? For some, it's a father that was locked away for abusing, you know, his wife, and then he left his wife and children behind. Now he's wondering, did my family get to heal from what I did? Or we are going to, I'm going to go there and
start from square one again.
Yes, I'll be a whole stranger to them. So those are some of the challenges that they face. And also, for some people, they serve for a longer period of time. And when they are coming back, they will literally have to start over making a living for themselves. Now they have this fear. Will anybody ever trust me to give me a job, for example? If they are maybe they are into the sector of self-employment, they'll have those questions. Will they, will the people be interested in using my, making use of my services or buying my products, whatever thing it is that they do as a way of making a living for themselves? They come back with such fears that will I really be able to just exist as a normal human being without being judged, without being excluded, without being rejected? Those are some of the things the ex-convicts have to deal with when they are facing release, when they are about to go back in the, to come back in their communities.
All right. Now, coming from a mental health perspective, what emotional or psychological challenges do most ex-convicts face when reintegrating into the society? Is there something that that disturbs their mind and change their mindset on doing things? Or what are those emotional or psychological challenges they may face?
Okay. I'm sorry, I will need you to repeat that question.
Yeah, you know, you know what? We have a lot of challenges, right? And one of those have highlighted them of them having a fear of judgmental, you know, they fear to be judged by the society, by the family, fear of being accepted, fear of, you know, starting from square one again, because maybe people might not even get them right or understand them. Because believe me, there has been a gap. When someone is convicted for a certain crime and then they go into the correctional facility, they will not come back the same person again, because there, something took place, something took over. It's like they were polished. And even now, they have seen that, yes, oh, I was guilty, man. I've seen, I did a mistake. I know there I was wrong. At least I was supposed to do A, B, C, D, E, you know. So now that they are now back in the society, and some they are accepted, some they are not, they have faced those challenges, you know, they are just thinking here and there. Maybe, do you think they might also face mental health challenges, emotional challenges, you know? Is there some of the psychological challenges they may face that can also lead to even committing bigger crimes? Or what do you think about that? What do you think regarding that situation?
Yeah, like I said earlier, now they are coming back, and then they have that fear of, what if I'm rejected? What if they don't accept me? And indeed, in the society, we have people that just do not want to associate with those people. And we cannot blame them, because someone needs to educate those people. Someone needs to give them, to change their perspective on how they look at these people. So now when they come into society and then no one is accepting them, and all they receive is judgment and, you know, being excluded from things, these people are most likely to become angry. They will become angry, and this will make them fall into situations like depression, and eventually they'll be forced to fall back into that life. into that life that led them to being sentenced.
Mm.
So that is why support is needed when it comes to dealing with ex-convicts, because most of the time they just serve and then they are released. The correctional facilities do their part,
mm.
and then they release them back into society.
Mm.
But then when they come back into society, what next?
Mm.
What then? But if they come back and then they come back to a reality of shame, a reality of being judged, a reality of being excluded,
mm.
rejected, and all these things, eventually these people fall into depression, because as human beings, we all crave to be, you know, to be accepted. We all crave to have that sense of belonging. We all want to be acknowledged. And mm. when we do not get, it's a basic human need to be acknowledged, to be accepted, you know, to feel that love from other people, from the people around you. So now in cases where they do not get that, it is guaranteed that they will fall into, you know, mental derailment. They'll get depressed. They'll get angry. And eventually they will fall back into a life of crime. Even if when they were serving their term, they swore to themselves that I will never go back there. I will never do that mm. again. I will never be that person.
Mm. So, while you are here, you are trying to emphasize that, you know, rejection is one of the contributing factors towards depression, because if we are to reject these people, and I've seen it in so many cases, not now, just regarding the ex-convict, most of the times when one is rejected, they find that room of isolation, right?
Mm.
And
mm.
when you are stuck in your corner, once you isolate yourself, now mm. thoughts coming. And believe me, those thoughts, they are not the positive ones. They are not the good ones. Those yeah. are the negative thoughts. And now mm. coming to the ex-convicts, most of the times, you know, they also have their expectations, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when their expectations are not met, when their needs are not met, what do they do? Let me say the person came home expecting that life, maybe the person is starting over. He needs a new life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And coming back home, he's just so excited that maybe these people, you know, they will accept him, they will push him, they will lift him, they will yeah. offer a shoulder to lean on. But mm-hmm. out of those things, it's rejection. What do yeah. they do? Most of the times they are forced even to go back to their vomit. Because the person will be thinking, mm-hmm. okay, I thought, me serving in the correctional facility, I was trying to work on myself, and right now I'm back to correct the mistake that I did. But what is this? Mm. It's like these people don't even understand me. Why mm. am I even here? Why am I wasting my time trying to explain to people that I'm a whole changed person? I've admitted my guilt. I have admitted my mistake, and I'm here for good, mm. here to start a new life, to start a new journey with you. And I expect you all to help me, but why are you pushing me away? So mm. that is when this person will even just go and get involved in some of the situation that will even push him unknowingly to commit crimes, you know?
Mm.
Or this person will be just vulnerable. It's not mm. like they are rejected or something else. The person will come back home. No one is even saying, okay, please take the $20 just to go buy yeah. your soup, just to wash yourself. Mm. Take this $20 just to go buy your cream. Okay, you said you need what. Let me also just come in for you. Get this one. The person is just there. The person don't have, this person is so vulnerable. She don't have anything. She don't even know how to ask for help, because after all, you know, those answers that are coming back from the person that they even trust, they are not even making sure, you know?
Mm.
So what are they left with? It's some of the bad things, bad thoughts, you know? The person is just forced in a situation that they don't even want to do. So here is a message that we, family members, relative friends, the society, we are responsible for these people's action. when they are coming back to us, how ready are we?
Yeah, exactly.
How ready are we?
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
You mentioned something about, you know, the people, you know, them coming back with expectations and then those expectations are not met. They are pushed away. And you said when they are isolated, they, you know, they tend to have, you know, time to think, but they are not going to think about good things. You know, even just in general, it is dangerous to have nothing to do. It is very dangerous to have nothing to do. You know, there is this saying that says, an idle mind is the devil's workshop. They will start thinking about all the bad things. They will start, thinking about those days. Let's say, for example, if a youth that was convicted for things related to drugs and all those things, they will start thinking about their family that they had made for themselves in that world. And they'll start thinking that those people are even better. There's so much love in that community where we were doing our drugs and, you know, doing all sorts of reckless things. And these people do not understand me. Those people understood me better. But the truth is that there was no love there because they were doing wrong things together. But because there is no love being offered here where they're supposed to be, you know, light and support, they will definitely find comfort in the wrong things. And eventually they will go back to the old person and maybe even do worse than they did before.
Beautiful audience, as I told you from the beginning, we are in the studio with Miss Paulina Nganekwa. She's a mental health advocate and we are just trying to engage on things that has to do with ex-convicts, you know, their journey, the crimes they were convicted for, them coming back in the society, their struggle, even their freedom, because some of them, they didn't just stuck there forever. They found their own breakthrough. And while we are still here, Miss Paulina, maybe how does the stigma affect their ability to rebuild their lives? And maybe what can we do to reduce that stigma? Because believe me, we still have people, they still have stigma. They are still living with shame, you know? They just feel like, oh, I feel like I don't belong here anymore. They are just stuck in that corner, you know? Yes, they found freedom from the correctional facility. They are now free. You know, they are back here. We live with them, but they just still have that shame. They still have that stigma. The person is just not free even to engage with their fellow youth, even to participate in some events, you know, even to do some business because they are still doubting, you know. Maybe how does stigma affect their ability just to rebuild their lives? And maybe, coming from you as a mental health advocate, how do you think that maybe this is the right platform or right way to reduce stigma?
Yeah, so this stigma and all this negativity that the community or we, the fellow community members accept these people with, it really does a lot of damage on those people because, you know, as human beings, we crave this, you know, this sense of support. We want to be cheered on. And if no one wants to associate with me, it's so easy for me to give up on myself. It is so easy for us to just give up on ourselves when we have no one, you know, on our corner saying, go Penny, go Penny. It's so easy for us to give up. It sounds like a simple gesture, but it goes a long way in our mental health, in the way we believe in ourselves, in our confidence. It really goes a long way. That is why it is so, you know, people that are educated or people that are emotionally intelligent, they are so big on compliments, you know, even if it's just a small step, you see them, wow, you are doing great. I'm so proud of you. This thing, they go a long way in one's sense of self-worth, in one's confidence in one's, you know, in the way they view themselves.
Mm.
When they do not have this support, when people are scared of them, they will eventually start internalizing all these things and, you know, just start believing that they are bad people.
Mm.
They start believing that they are not capable of doing anything good.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes them, you know, recoil into that life of just, you know, some will even start hating themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They will even start hating themselves. And eventually, they will hate all the people around them because hate people, hate people, hate people, hating people hate other people.
Mm. People with unmet needs. Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
They will eventually just, you know, they will lose the motivation to continue doing life. But some will not, they will not always commit suicide. But, you know, there are people that are just existing.
Mm.
But they are not living.
Mm, 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 mm.
They are just existing, but they have no motivation to do anything in life.
Mm.
Some will just, you know, become nobodies. They are just walking zombies. They have no motivation to do something for themselves. They have no motivation to go out there and just make a living for themselves.
Mm.
And that is where it ends. But for some, it is even more scary because they'll become, you know, psychopaths and do all sorts of bad things in the society because what is left for me? Hmm? Nobody believes in me, so who do I have to please?
Mm.
Maybe I should just, I might as well just go out there and cause havoc because I'm a nobody after all.
Mm.
So these are some of the things that, you know, the stigma, the rejection, and all this negativity causes unto the lives of the ex-convicts.
Mm.
And to maybe reduce that, I believe or I feel there is a need for more awareness in our societies, in our communities. We need to raise awareness on you know, crimes and just make people understand that people do not just wake up and decide that I want to be a bad person.
Mm.
I want to be a criminal.
Mm.
I want to read this book. Mm-hmm. But I'm not done reading it, actually.
Mm.
It's a book by the title, What Happened to You by Bruce D. Perry and Oprah Winfrey.
Mm.
This book, has conversations of trauma, resilience, and healing.
Mm.
And now it has conversations between Bruce D. Perry, who is a well-known brain development and trauma expert, and Oprah Winfrey. In this book, they tackle different lives of people that went through traumatic events in their childhood and all sorts of difficult situations in their earlier years and how those events have affected or shaped how they, you know, they perceive the world, how they react to everyday stressors.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to understand that, you know, where there is a criminal or a difficult person or an offender, there is a background of maybe pain, maybe shame, maybe anger, maybe rejection. We need to approach this issue of, you know, crimes and conviction. We need to look at these people from a point of view of what happened to you. Instead of judging and crucifying them for the things they did or the person they are, we first need to look at what happened to you.
Mm-hmm.
What brought you here?
Mm.
What made you become this person? Maybe if we could look more in that direction, then we would be able to give more grace to ex-offenders, to ex-convicts.
Mm.
Because nobody really just wakes up and decides that I am going to be a bad person.
Mm.
I am going to be a criminal.
Mm.
Something, some way must have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think awareness is all we need as a society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, while we are just still there, I just want to emphasize on something. I love the point that you highlighted that you can't just woke up and decide to be a bird person. Never. There should be a root cause. And most of the times now, we, the society, instead of looking at what could be the cause, what could be really the cause, what could be forced this person, because Paulina, you can't tell me that out of nowhere you just woke up and then you push your husband downstairs and tomorrow in the newspapers we are reading a 35 years old man died because of what? No. What is the cause root? Oh, God forbid. God forbid it's not your husband, it's not you. Yeah. So you just want to look at it. Maybe what is the cause root? And now I think that is where we really need to play a role and just to look that what could really force this person. Because this is a forced situation. This person is not mentally ill. This person is not mentally disturbed. But out of nowhere, why would be a 52 years old man just stand up from his bedroom and go rape a 5 years old a child? How? You'll be thinking, how? You know? Now for us now, I love the other point you emphasize on emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligent people, they have this, what is this? How should I even call it? You know, when you are emotional intelligent, you know when to stop, when to speak, when to just to calm yourself. Even when something is really disturbing you and pushing, pushing your mind like, do it. Answer this way. You know, slap this person, insult this person because of your calmness, because of your emotional intelligence, you will just know how to control your emotion, you know? And that is one of the things that may reduce stigma. How? Believe me, when you don't believe in yourself, when you don't have confidence in yourself, I don't think you overcome stigma. Because all of these things, it has to start with you. You telling yourself that, okay, today I'm released from the correctional facility and I'm going home. I'm aware of my brother or my uncle or my cousin who I know I'm expecting weird words from him or from her. I'm expecting brutal words, but how am I going to respond? I'm just getting released now. So as soon as I get home and I'm going to be tempted, you know, by these brutal words by my cousin or, you know, coming from anyone, how am I going to react? Should I fight back as soon as possible, knowing that you are coming from the correctional facility, knowing that you got released just now because, you know, you complied and whatnot? Or how are you going to work on that? Or you just after a week staying home and then you decided, no, I'm going to grab a drink at a certain bar or shebeen.
If you've reached that stage in life where you are tired of everything, where each day is just routine, dah, yammer me oh. No, seriously, I am genuinely sorry for you, cause you clearly haven't been polanified. Like boring day at the spun. Polanify your lunch hour with a delicious Polana curry. Chewing through yet another stale sandwich. Polanify your burger with a little mac and cheese. Tired of chewing the same shandy? Polanify your munchies with air-fried Polana pasta chips. Come on, life's too short for boring. Polanify every moment with Pasta Polana, a proud product of Namib Mills.
A drink at a certain bar or shebeen.
Yeah.
And believe me, you'll find those people who provoke you for no reason. Those people who want to step on your toes. How are you going to respond? How are you going to react? And your freedom will be determined by the decision that you are going to make and how you are going to apply it. So how ready are you? How ready are you? And now you breaking from the stigma. Believe me, we said it's going to start from you, right? Miss Paulina, I have emphasized on that. And you, if you have to look at yourself as an offender forever, you'll be an offender forever. But if you have to picture yourself as somebody that has admitted his guiltiness, his mistake or her mistake, and is willing to rectify it, not just by words, but by action also, how are you going to do that? And the way you are going to do it is going to break you from the stigma. Even if you have to go and stand presenting in a certain community event, and you are going to stand with a testimony, believe me, you are breaking the stigma. But if you have to look at yourself always, you know, you have that picture of you in a correctional facility behind the bar, behind the, in the cell. If that is the only thing that you carry in your mind, and even when you see other young people in the community, that is how you look at yourself. You don't want to level yourself up. You don't want to accept your situation. You know, how are you going to break free? So that it has to come from you, the effort that you are making.
Yeah.
If people are applying for a certain job somewhere, the first thing that will come in your mind is, me, I will not get employed. Why?
Really because
I have a criminal record. Says who? What if people want to hire, what is this? People just want to hire something that has nothing to do with the conviction that you are convicted for. I'm sure that if maybe, what is this? I mean, sometimes we just need a better understanding. We just need also to get the right information, get on proper platform and share with people that really, 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 really contribute to our betterment and, you know, just you improving yourself. You don't need to be stuck forever. You don't need to be there. Or what are you saying about that, Miss Paulina?
Yeah, while you're at it, you mentioned that, you know, it has to start with you to break free from that stigma. And you said if you don't go out there, if you don't believe in yourself, no one will believe in you. That is very true. Because, you know, someone said, if you do not, life will meet you at your level of audacity. Life will just meet you at your level of audacity. The same thing goes with how you love yourself. People will love you depending on how you love yourself. People will, you know, people will look at you, they will value you depending on how you value yourself. The lesser you value yourself, the lesser people will value you, because you are portraying yourself out there as a nobody with no boundaries, with no value. People will walk all over you if you do not, you know, raise that standard that, no, this is me. I was a murderer. I've committed a murder, or I've committed theft. I've been convicted of this crime, but that is not who I am anymore. When you step out there and you portray that person, a new person, and people are most likely to look at you as a changed person. But if you are just stuck in a, you know, in a pool of, you know, self-pity, victim mentality, then people will also just look at you like that. So I think apart from support now from us, family members of this people in question, or community members, there's also a need for support for these people, for the ex-convicts. They need mental support. They need psychological support. They need to be given, you know, I believe these things are happening in correctional facilities, rehabilitation, where they are getting, some are getting education, some are getting, therapy, some are getting therapy on, you know, social, you know, things related to social welfare. If they are getting, if only they you know, could be getting enough support there when it comes to, you know, pertaining to the, how they are going to relate with other people when they come back, then I think it would also go a long way in them integrating, reintegrating successfully into the society,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
learning how to maneuver around, you know, people and their weaknesses and their ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, beautiful audience. As I said it earlier, we are on the Ex-Convict Diaries show, and you know, people have their expectations, and I know the audience have their expectations. They're eager to know more, like getting to know the ex-convict stories, opening their diaries, their journeys, you know, and everything. But today, I said we are in the studio with with Ms. Paulina Nganekwa, and we are just trying to engage, to discuss all of this, be it now the contribution factors to crimes on, and how are we going to help these people, now that they are back in the society and whatnot. Remember, these people are our family members, and their conviction it's also have also affected us, or it's also yeah. affecting us now. Yeah. Coming, still standing at the breaking the stigma.
Yeah.
Remember, we said it has to start with them. It has to start with you. But
yeah.
we family members as well, we friends, we also need to contribute to it, because the person can be just trying over and over, but it's like, the person is trying to do something, and it's like you are pulling them back.
Yeah.
It's like you have nothing positive towards that. You can't even just say a word. Oh, I love the way you are trying. Oh,
yeah.
So you decided to do A, B, C, D. Oh, yeah. You are really trying, and I'm going to do what. I will be here. I'll be what. I'll be what. People also need to be pushed. They need to be boosted. We also need, we can't just be saying, preaching support system, but
yeah.
what support are you offering?
Yeah.
If your own brother that came from a Krishna facility, you are failing just to support them. You are failing just to go in his bedroom when he's grieving and just say, you know, brother, I understand your situation.
Yeah.
I know right now you are guilty. That is why you are showing all this empathy, these emotions, this whatnot.
Yeah.
We understand. And right now, the fact that we don't want you to go even to that old person.
Yeah.
We are going to support you. We'll be here. We understand.
Mm.
You can't even tell the person that I feel your pain, that I understand that you have changed.
Yeah.
You know, just a word.
I have faith in you.
I have faith in you that you'll not be the same person again. That you are here to start a new chapter, and I know you'll do it.
Mm.
Sometimes it's us with our words. We keep reminding them.
Yeah.
Let me just tell you something. You have a brother that came from a Krishna facility, and you have that niece or nephew of yours staying in your house. But every time this child do something wrong, is it not you that your father that what? Is it not that your mother that what are you doing? What
or
exactly?
Maybe,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or maybe do you want to go to jail like your uncle?
Exactly. Do you know that there is a damage that you are doing? Because this child will be thinking, like, going to jail like my uncle, what is she trying to say? Is she seeing me as a criminal? Is she seeing me doing wrong things that will really lead me to a correctional facility? But I'm just a child. How is she looking at me? You know, sometimes we are also failing to support our loved ones. And believe me, this is also your pain. Because if this person has to be convicted for a certain crime, when you were also there and then you can't even help, you'll be spending your transport money going to a correctional facility to go and visit this person, buying food to go there. And some people are even, they are placed at far places. Imagine you're in the north, but your brother is placed at a Window Krishna facility. And you are supposed to be looking after this person. What if this person is not feeling well? Don't tell me that it's just the correctional facility and the hospital that have to be taking care of this person. After all, this is your person. This is your family. Yeah. You are supposed to take care of them. Now imagine you were supposed to be there standing in for them, but you have failed. Because you feel like you can't do it. Because you feel like this person is an adult and you don't need to help them. How does that feel? When you also have to be on the road, evening and night, going to what? To visit them, spending your money.
Let me hold you right there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not only even, you know, between you and the person, but you suffer that shame because people will be pointing to you. That is Miss Penny, the sister to the guy that, you know, that raped a person.
Mm.
That is, and now you are injury to one, injury to all.
Miss Paulina, maybe you can also just come in and just tell us on how does supporting the ex-convict contribute to lowering reoffending rates and the overall crime in the society? Because believe me, for as much as we want to support these people, how does that contribute when in crime reduction? How does that contribute?
When they are supported, maybe I should just highlight on the support that we are talking about here. It must start inside, right? Inside the correctional facility, the rehabilitation. When they get rehabilitation before they are released, and this includes now, you know, getting anger management classes for those ones that are maybe that were convicted for violence, you know, getting therapy in regard to substance abuse, mental health, life skills, you know, literacy, parenting skills. You know, some were convicted of abuse, child abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So when they are getting all this support inside the rehabilitation center, they are better prepared to come back in society and start over as a new person that is more socially responsible. Let's say, for example, if a person was convicted of child abuse, maybe abusing their own child or, you know, a child within the family. And then now when they are inside there, they are being taught life skills, how to interact with other people, or they are being, you know, given therapy on how to manage their feelings and emotions. You know, when they are prepared before they enter, it goes a long way. It just, you know, shoots them some feet forward before they come into the society. They are better prepared, not them just coming in society. You are dropped there and then you are starting from scratch. You have nothing. Mind you, some of these people are coming from families where they, you know, everyone is just struggling. And if they do not have that support from inside the correctional facility, then the term they served is as good as, you know, it will be useless, if I'm to use that word. Because when they receive that support, that rehabilitation while they're inside, especially when they're about to be released and it may be intensified, they'll come back, they are boosted, they are prepared, they are given that, you know, precondition of them starting over, even if they are going to now find a therapy or try to find new ways to start over, they have something to hold on to. And apart from rehabilitation in the facilities, now we as a society, we have that responsibility to give them financial support. You know, you said earlier on, you know, you come back and no one is even, you know, telling you take this 20 to go buy yourself soap. Now, when they come back and they have to start over trying to make a living for themselves, as family members or even just responsible community members, it doesn't have to be my family member. It can be a community member. When you just take out that amount of 1,000. It can be 1,000 to go buy a box of tomatoes or boxes of tomatoes. It can be, you know, something. However, how it depends on how capable you are and the potential you see in the person. When you give them a capital to start a business, or you maybe give them sponsorship to go back to school for those ones that were, that couldn't finish, you know, a university or something. Invest in something that will help them lift themselves up. When we do all these things, then we have, we give them, the courage to start over again. We give them the courage to live right again. Because, in as much as we love to look at these people and judge them and, you know, want to crucify them in our hearts, these are people, most of the crimes committed, they came about, you know, as the peak of a struggling season in someone's life. Some were struggling financially until they decided to become, you know, thieves, robbers. I've been struggling to really just see another day. And then someone approaches me with an offer. Let's, you know, there's, I have a way. Let's go, you know, rob a bank. The person will accept. So when they are supported, it gives them the courage to start over again and to live right again. And when this happens, then we have hope of a, you know, a crime-free nation or crime-free communities.
So
they have they have the courage to do things right again because they have the support. They know there's someone to cheer them on, even if the beginning will always be difficult. As long as there is that one person that is cheering them on, then they are most likely to become better individuals and even, you know, contribute to this society that needs all of us to stand and develop.
So what you're trying to say is there should be a support system, right? These people, for as much as we judge them, for as much as we also expect them to change, it's like we need to meet them halfway. Because believe me, these are the, these people, like, this person, he is at his lowest, right? And let me say maybe unemployment is one of the contributing factor to why he committed this crime. This person is at his lowest. This person is trying to, is trying so hard to make a living. And this person, as much as they also want to stop, they have no another reason to stop. Nobody's giving them a reason to stop. And for as much as they are not stopping, for as much as we are, I mean, for as much as we are not supporting them, or there is nothing that is supporting them, then they will also not stop. And the crime, there will be an increasement in crime. Crimes, because this person will still offend, re-offend, offend, re-offend, go to the correctional facility, come back, go back, come back, you know? So what you are trying to emphasize on is, we need to support these people. These people need to work. These people need to be kept busy, right? And now it also depends to us. How are we going to involve them? How are we going to step in for them? If it's now them, let me say, for example, this person is not educated. Thereby education, they are not doing so well. They don't even need have qualifications. They don't need papers. And sometimes the person is just asking you, I just need $2,000 or $5,000 to start my barber shop. It's not like it's hard to cut hair. Or I just want a startup kit to do my nails. It's not hard to paint nails, you know. But still, you will still reject this person. Let me say you are an elder brother, or you are just an elder sibling, mother, father, you know. You as a parent, the child is asking, okay, Meme, now I have failed grade 10, and you know me, I didn't do, did so well in school. What else can I do? I just need $5,000 or I need $3,000 because I want to start my business. But you as a parent or you as an elder sibling, you would just say no. Will you even do well in business, you? How can you assure me that you can do business? But because this person is asking is because they know they are capable. Now that they are back here, they know if you give me this $500, I'll be able to do ABCD. But sometimes our response will come. If I give you my $500, you are just going to drink alcohol and use drugs and whatnot. But it's like you are now provoking this person. If you really want them to change, if you really want them to stop reoffending or not even to go and offend, commit other crimes, don't you think you are the one that is going to, that need to play a role? Don't you think you are the one that's to lead this person? If you know that they are not capable, why can't you start for them? Are you happy that you will see this person reoffending and reoffending? Tomorrow is your sister that is way. Tomorrow, another day is your sister that is, you know, news circulating that she did what and what and what. Aren't you tired? What do you think is that one thing that you will do? And believe me, that is the only way. If we are to support these people, as Miss Paulina said it, I mean, what if you want crimes to reduce in our community, we have to step in. We can't just release the person and say, go to your house. And we are not stepping in for them. We can't even say, how are you doing? Where are you standing now? You know? If it was now theft that led this person to correctional facility, now that they are back, did we even do any monitoring? Did we even do any evaluation? You see? So there is just a lot that we also need to get involved if you also want the crimes to reduce and whatnot. Miss Paulina, you have really highlighted the key mental health interventions and then the support, which I can also look at it and prove it to be very effective when it comes to preventing recidivism, because we are all fighting recidivism. We don't want these people to keep going to correctional facility and come back and go back and come back and go back, you know. But maybe, why do you think rehabilitation to be more effective than punishment alone? You know, because most of the times we want people to be punished. Let's just even take an example of what is this? This school kids which really don't have discipline, right? And the teacher could be like, I even just wish the police could come and beat you left, right, and center, and take you even to a holding cell because you are not even behaving well. You don't have discipline. But coming from you, why is rehabilitation more effective than punishment alone? Just in ensuring that there's a long-term public safety.
So, I believe so much that, like I think I've said it earlier, that for every offender, for every crime committed, for every wrong deed, there is always a provocative situation behind it. There is always a provocative situation behind it. And we are not trying to take away this the law of punishment. But if you look at it, you know, from a point of view of being human, and you know, or just, you know, being human, you agree that punishment does more damage than rehabilitation. Rehabilitation, you know, rehabilitation, it provokes this, you know, this, process of self-rediscovery. It helps them shed off the, you know, the old habits that led them in that place, and then help them to determine a new path in life. That is what rehabilitation does. But punishment, yes, it we are trying to make them feel the pain for their actions, and then in hopes that they would decide to change,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they do not want to walk that road again. But in all honesty, punishment does more harm because it takes a lot from them. You know, let's say it's a businessman that, you know, is arrested for some years. Now, when this person did not have partners in this business dealings, or he didn't have a strong support system back at home, when he comes back, trust me, this business will be, you know, will have fallen down totally. And then they will have to start over again. And apart from that, imagine you are a university student and then you committed a crime, you serve for this crime for some years. And when you come back, you have missed out, you have lost touch of, you know, time. Your peers have left you. And you are going to start over. You are going to go back to university and the curriculum has even changed.
Mm-hmm.
And there you are just trying to get your life together.
Mm-hmm.
So punishment, it is needed because, you know, it is needed. But the truth is that I believe it does more damage than the rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm.
But I thank the Lord that we have... in Namibia, there is punishment,
mm-hmm.
and there is also it goes along with the rehabilitation in mm-hmm. the facilities. It's good to know that they are not only getting punished,
mm-hmm.
but they also get the rehabilitation, which is a good thing because the rehabilitation it's more beneficial. It makes them, you know, see where they went wrong and how they should have done it better or how they should have taken better alternatives, you know. And when they come out, they at least have an idea on how they are expected to behave as human beings in the face of challenges, in the face of, you know, provocative situations, in seasons of need, in seasons of lack. They know that they, you know, they can do better.
Mm.
Rehabilitation, you know, brings you in that place where you know better and you are motivated to do better.
Mm.
Yeah, so that is how I see the difference between...
And this just brought me back to what when I'm now thinking and looking at the correctional facility name. So this mm-hmm. came from correction. It's like people mm-hmm. are there to be corrected, to be guided, you know.
I've never thought of it that way, but it makes a lot of sense.
I just thought of it now. Correctional facility correction, you know, these people have been as I said it earlier, we are in the studio with Miss Paulina Nganekwa and we are just trying to discuss, to emphasize on this program, this show, the Ex-Convict Diaries. And I hope the audience, you are on board, you are listening, and you are having your questions, and you are going to call us later in the studio so that you ask. Also, you can also add your input on that. And Miss Paulina, we are still remember, after all, we want to make an impact, you know, when we are helping and when you are assisting the ex-convicts. It's because we want to make an impact on their lives.
Yeah.
We want to impact their families as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We want to do something. There should be changes. There should be transformation taking place. There should be something should come to life, you know. Now, regarding that, regarding the impact, regarding the transformation, regarding all the good things that we want the ex-convicts to do, to change, be it their lifestyle, be it their stories, be it now their relationship with their families, now back in the society and whatnot, what positive changes occur in an ex-convict's mental health when they feel supported and when they feel supported by the society? So what exactly, I mean, what do you think are the positive changes that will occur or that will impact in the ex-convict's life when they feel really, really supported, when they feel like, no, this person, I think this person understand me. I I think my mother truly understands. I think my father truly understands that somewhere, I really went wrong. My actions were not really good. And right now, they feel me. They understand me. They are supporting me. So, what positive changes do you think really okay in this person's life and their mental health when they feel supported, when they feel loved, when they feel accepted back in the society?
Yeah. So, when they feel accepted, when they are supported, when we give them that sense of belonging in the society, it really goes a long way. First, it just boosts their moral in doing life again. And they are motivated because, when concerning relationships and interactions with other people, that statement of Ubuntu, Ubuntu, we are a people by people for people, it really goes a long way. And as human beings, we do not really live for ourselves. We do not live for ourselves. So when we feel supported, when we feel loved, it just gives us that drive to live right. Because, we are doing, at least there's someone we are doing it for. Let's say, for example, an ex-convict is back in society and then the family members are cheering this person on. They are supporting this person. So this person feels that, yes, these are my people. And I must do everything to make my people happy. At least they believe in me. They believe in me. I have their support, meaning they want to see me doing better. And so I must do it for them. When they support from home, then, these people will have the drive to do well in life. They will have the drive to, become a better person. Let me just give this common example. With young people, young people can be living wild and doing all sorts of things, but as soon as they become a mother or a father, most people, let me say 85% of young people, they can be, reckless. But as soon as they become a mother or a father, watch how that person's life will change. Watch how that person's life will change. That is just to cement my statement that we do not really live for ourselves. So when they support from home, these people will get a new desire to live, not only live, but to live right, to better themselves, to just become that somebody because they someone, they know they will be, we often say our reward is after this life. But, there's that instant reward that just hits different and it just gives you that motivation. When you hear that well done from your loved one, when you hear that, I see you, you are doing great. It's just another form of motivation. So when they feel supported, they do more good. They strive to do more good. They strive to be better. And when they are supported, it also brings positive change in our society at large. There's our communities will become safer communities because who is going to be committing crime? If these people, they are now, they have found a new, a new motivation to live right and to do right and just be good people. It really goes a long way, not just for the people themselves, but also for our societies. Yeah, when we have ex-convicts that are successfully reintegrated into the society, then we have a much more safer environment. We have less crimes being committed. And yeah, that is just as simple as that. Support, it gives them a new meaning in life. And then they have a new will to live, and not only live, but to live right. And then there is less chances of recidivism.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. So while we are still there, Miss Paulina, especially at the support system that you have highlighted, that when these people feel supported, when they feel pushed, they don't just do things for themselves anymore. They feel like, no, there is someone that is looking up on me. It's just not me alone. It's I can also do this for other people, you know, because now these people, they are supporting me because they see something in me. Can't I return it back in a good way as well? So while we are still there, how does reintegration support influence the well-being of their families, especially children? You know, let me say somebody who is fully reintegrated, fully rehabilitated, and now they come back to the they come back home. They'll find their family there. And even children are there. So how to feel this reintegration influence the well-being of those family members, especially the children?
So it really it affects families it's mostly negative. And given that you mentioned children, let's say, for example, this is an offender that was convicted of, you know, violence. And nowadays, kids are learning about, you know, different unacceptable behaviors in schools. They know what rape is. They know what physical abuse is. They know all these things. And then they are hearing, you know, uncle was arrested because of this. Daddy is in prison because of that. So when this person is coming back, it really affects the family, because there is going to be tension. You know, there is going to be tension, not between the this ex-convict that is coming back in the family and the family, or sometimes this convict, this ex-convict had committed a crime unto a family member. So now there is so much tension, especially if the victim maybe never successfully sought help, you know, they never went for therapy, they never made an effort to heal. Because sometimes we are ignorant. You feel like just because the person is locked away, you feel like that's the end of the road. But did you heal you yourself? Did you let go of whatever happened? And this, before you know it, this person is coming back. So there is a chance of that tension. You know, maybe the ex-convict is back now, but he was fortunate enough to receive that rehabilitation. They have rediscovered themselves. They have, you know, vowed to take a new path and become a new person that is, you know, that wants the best for others and is no longer selfish. But then now there's a victim that is still angry, that is still scared, that is still anxious. So it really affects the family, the unity in the family. Sometimes it even brings separation in some families. You see some families where, especially those offenses that are committed within the family. Sometimes we have seen families just get separated because of one child, you know, doing something to the other child, and then now the family is separated. Mommy and her side, daddy and her side, because of these things. So it's a really complex situation that requires, you know, some action to be done before the offender is reintegrated in the society or brought back into the family.
All right. While we are still there, is it still the same when someone is fully reintegrated, fully rehabilitated, and then they are back home? Does the situation still feel the same, or does the these people, like the family, also maybe needs to be taken through a certain program whereby they really need to start finding peace, to let go and to understand of what really happened, and they will not be disappointed or be triggered anymore by this person when they are back home? Or what exactly? Or okay, Miss Paulina, while we are still there, maybe I would ask you, or maybe you really need to emphasize on some of the ways that can really, some of the ways that the community can help families of the ex-convict to heal from the trauma, or maybe the shame or social pressure, because there will be tensions, right? There will be tensions. Remember, this person did you wrong.
Yeah.
And this person is coming back home.
Mm.
You'll be so ready to welcome and accept this person back home. But, you know, a human being with emotions and feeling, you'll just be triggered. So maybe in what ways can the community help family members of the ex-convicts heal from that trauma, from that shame, or from that social pressure?
Yeah, that is a very interesting question.
Mm.
Because, you know, I think that is the most overlooked aspect,
you know,
the process now of reconciliation between the offenders and their families.
Mm.
I really feel like it's overlooked.
Mm.
Yeah, of course there are families where people are more woke, they, you know, they look at these things and, you know, counteract on them before they happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, there's a need for, you know, reconciliation initiatives that must be spearheaded by a professional that, you know, that can, you know, maybe take them through therapy before, take the family through therapy before this person is brought back to them. Because, you know, when they are taken through therapy, it creates a platform for them to determine whether they have really forgiven or not, whether they have healed, whether they have come to terms with what has happened. Because at the end of the day, this is, this person is one of us and he or she must come back, because where are we going to take them? Your people are your people. So when there are proper reconciliation measures put in place with the help of a professional, maybe a social worker, or someone from the correctional facility that is better equipped in these things, it eliminates so many negative things, such as, you know, holding on to fear from the side of the family members. You know, it eliminates chances of, you know, holding grudges, and also it helps restore trust. For example, if maybe it's determined that the damage was so deep, or mentally wise, maybe now the professionals can maybe even start arranging visits, occasional visits, before this person is eventually fully released. Occasional visits, and then they sit and then just have maybe a family therapy, group therapy, and see how it is going. Just to avoid these things of shock. The person is back and the emotions are running high in the place, and that is how we eventually see people becoming three people. Because now the person is fully back, and that is when the reality hits that we cannot coexist at all. The emotions are high, the trauma is just too much. So maybe to avoid this situation, when proper reconciliation measures are put in place and on time enough before the release, I believe then it will be easier for these people to settle back in their families without back and forth and, you know, eventually rejection being thrown out, becoming homeless and all these things.
Mm.
And this is where I think religious bodies should also come in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, spiritual leaders should come in and offer family counseling and prayers. And yeah, your question was in families and also what can the community do
mm-hmm.
to ease out on this shame and guilt, right?
The trauma, the shame, the social pressure, you know, people yeah. are throwing you words because your child did what, because your spouse did what, because, you know, those tensions. Mm. So how does the community, support or can come in a way that it will ease all of these things?
Yeah. So I've already mentioned, reconciliation measures and the involvement of professionals, either social workers, psychologists, or, you know, trained officers from the correctional facilities.
Mm.
And I also mentioned that religious bodies can also come in those situations you know, maybe be paying frequent visits to families that are going through such situations to offer spiritual counseling and all these things. And as ordinary community members, we ought to, you know, be gracious and advocate for reconciliation instead of just, you know, encouraging family members to push their loved ones away by, you know, indulging in so much negative talks. Well, you know, when he's coming back, I pity your kids.
Mm.
I really pity your kids. How are you going to live now with a murderer in your house? How are you, you know, the person is already battling this thought, and then me as a neighbor, all I can do is add more fuel to the fire. If we as community members can maybe just be more gracious and just put ourselves in the shoes of those people, then I think we will have better reintegration of our loved ones in society.
Oh, I wonder how people really solve all these family matters, because imagine even just a single person, an individual person going through something and they don't even want to seek for counseling, just to seek for guidance, just to, for somebody to see things through for them. And really you really highlighted a very important point of family reconciliation. Some people just need to be put together.
Yeah.
You are better together. We are better together. Because if we have to turn our back away from each other, how are we going to move? Family reconciliation measures, that would be a key point really to support families of the ex-convict families, for us to get away with these traumas, for this social pressure, you know, with all these ongoing things. If really, I think some of this that really need to be applied to. I said I'm in the studio with Ms. Paulina Nganekwa, and we are really, really discussing a lot of things that regards the ex-convict diary program. And it's not just about the ex-convicts. It's about us. It's about the community. It's about the law itself. It's like this thing has affected all of us. It's not one person. It's not a sided story. We are all involved.
Yeah.
And regarding now the community at large, the broader community, the law enforcement benefit, how does supporting ex-convict ease the workload and the pressure for the criminal justice and the policing system? Believe me, right now, having the inmates in correctional facility, we can say that workload is for the correctional, the correctional officers' work, you know? But now when these people come back in the society, in the community, in our community, right? And how can the ex-convict ease or make it easier, make the workload for the criminal justice and policing system easier? How will they contribute towards that? Do we need them in the society to share their stories as we just created a platform for them like this? Do we need to invite them to events? Do we need to, them to invite them to schools? Do we, how do you think their stories, their support, their contribution will ease the workload and the pressure of the criminal justice and the policing system?
So, I already mentioned earlier that, you know, the more the, when we have ex-convicts that are successfully reintegrated into the society and they are fully restored to living right, then we have a much more safer, we will have much more safer communities. And this will eventually lead to less crimes, which means a reduced burden on the, you know, law and enforcement bodies and the criminal justice body. So it is that simple. When they are supported and they are able to successfully, you know, come back into the society and be changed, be transformed, be restored, the lesser the crimes, the lesser the burden on the law enforcement bodies.
And I still just want to emphasize there that, you know, when we are supporting the ex-convicts, it can also, in a way that the workload for our criminal justice law and policing system will become easier, is remember, we can set these people as role, as good role examples. How? Let me say if somebody has truly changed, someone was convicted for a certain crime, they've been incarcerated, and then when they are released and back in the society now, you can truly see that, oh, this person truly changed. Oh, so this person now, even after that conviction, they still went back to school. They studied. And then when they studied, they did not just stuck in their shame. They still went out, share their stories, share their testimonies of the life they have lived behind bars, how they came out, you know, with all the struggle, how they just truly changed, because changes can just happen like that. It's effort that were made. It's effort that are made. They made effort that, you know what? I don't want to be stuck here forever. I want to, regardless of the crime that I have committed, you know, I came out and I'm a living testimony. I have changed somebody today, or my story has inspired someone out there or a young generation not to commit a crime.
Yeah.
You know, even that way, it's like they are creating awareness, right? And the more they are creating awareness, the more they also shape a younger generation or extend this what? This message to the next person that, oh, I have heard Penny's story. So she was also convicted for ABCDE. And that is how life felt to be incarcerated, to live behind bars. And now that she's back, she's now trying to explain and emphasize with anybody that, yo, stay away from crimes. Don't do A, B, C, D. That was supposed to be our what? Our criminal justice law's work. But it's like they are making also their work easier for them, because they did not decide to stuck in their shame, not to come out and share their stories as we expect them to come in the studio and share their diaries and share their stories. Because somebody out there, they are going to build their life on that. I love how you emphasize on that point. And Ms. Paulina, while we are still there, we have spoken of the roles of mental health professions on when it comes to ex-convicts, reducing recidivism, you know, reducing crimes, right? And how the what the law enforcement can you know, can come together with these people. And just try to come up with something that will cater for them. So regarding that now, How does the successful reintegration improve now the trust between communities, the law enforcement, and the returning citizens to the community?
So when when these people are successfully reintegrated, there's a chance of you know, revived societies where you know, people who have more faith in their loved ones that are convicted, when you say in communities in general, it will bring about you know, trust. The people, the employees will be more confident in giving these people jobs. Organizations will be more confident in sponsoring these people that are coming from correctional institutions. When they see that, okay, so these things are happening, these people are capable of changing, it's possible. They see the result of some of those ones that will, you know, come forth and share their stories and all these things. Then it will help other members of society to see these ex-convicts, you know, through different lens, and it will foster a positive relationship between the ex-convicts and the other society members that were formerly ignorant towards these things, that used to look at them as monsters, as outcasts.
Okay. There is I just want to share what you know, when we are all involved, ne? Earlier I said we are better together. Because remember, it's now the ex-convicts, right? It's the family, it's the law enforcement, it's the community at large. When someone commit a crime, we just don't want them to be taken to a correctional facility. We just don't want them to be behind bar, just to be incarcerated, have that experience and whatnot. It's because at the end of the day, we want these people to change, right? We want these people to learn a lesson, but at the same time, we want them to come out right. And now, for the successful reintegration, can improve trust between the community, the law enforcement, and the returning citizen if there is a support. I only see what the current inmates at Oluno Correctional Facility, I have seen that. There's a problem whereby, you know, it's not just about them being corrected. It's about them. Sometimes they will be taken to schools, especially high schools, and then they'll go there and share their story. When they share their story, they will start exactly of what crime they are convicted for. And then their experience behind bars, you know, you living in the correctional facility for 5 years, how does it feel? How life, you know, they will share with the school kids. And, you know, you see, there is a support. It's like we are all fighting from all angles. And even now, when they are back here, when they are coming back in the society, once they got released, you can literally tell that this person is, this changes. It's not just starting now. It's not, this journey is not starting now. This person started long way back while they were still incarcerated. Because they saw there is a need for me to change, for me to impact a next person. And now they are trying to build that trust between the law. They have already assured the law or the correctional facility officers that I am capable. I've realized that I made a mistake, and now that I know I did a mistake, I'm going to rectify it. And by rectifying it, it's not just with me. I'm going to extend it to other people. And community-wise, when these people are big, believe me, some of them, they are ready. They are ready to be better people. They are ready to try out new things. They are ready to improve. They are ready even to prove to us that give me this chance. Give me another chance. I want to do it. I want to assure you that yes, I'll do it. But they can't do it alone. That is why it is the community at large. It is us, the people, us, the relative, us, professional health, people and mental health, specialists that we need to come in for these people. And, there should be what? We have to be involved, right? But there should be steps to be taken.
Mm-hmm.
And we have started. We have started now with the ex-convict diaries. We also have some other platform whereby we are creating awareness. We are educating people. We are sharing our stories. But, while we are there, Miss Paulina, I want you to share with us, or probably highlight, some practical steps, that the communities and the radio platforms like the ex-convict diaries can take to support the former inmates. Are there some, is there some organizations that you will suggest, or is there some programs that, exactly like what we do now? We are creating a platform for the ex-convicts to come on board, share their stories, because believe me, somewhere, somebody is listening to their stories. And if this person have to come in the studio and say, look, I'm an ex-convict, but ever since my release, ever since I came in the society, I have been trying so hard to look for a job. But looking for a job, it's not like people can't employ me. It's because I don't have a qualification. But there is, but I can cut hair, but I can build, but I can do A, B, C, D. If there is an audience on board that is listening and is probably is building a building home, you think it's very difficult to come and say, no, I need people who want to build.
Yeah.
It will be an opportunity for them. So now coming from you, what practical steps can communities and radio platforms like the ex-convict diaries take to support the former inmates?
Yeah, so, you know, there is this statement that says it takes a village.
Mm.
And we mostly apply it to raising kids. But then I think we can also use it in this situation where we are addressing this issue of, you know, our brothers and sisters being looked at as outcasts, being excluded, being rejected, and all those things. And we really have a collective responsibility to ensure that those people return smoothly among us and they are able to start over or continue from where they left off with ease. And like I said earlier, this program is really going to bring so much light onto this matter of ex-convicts being looked at as monsters, being, you know, being treated as outcasts. Because when I want to believe that this program is going to cover more stories of ex-convicts, but they will not only cover them or maybe just talk about how they committed a crime, but I want to believe they are going to dig much deeper on what happened and what really happened that led them becoming offenders and the life they experienced when they were there locked up.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, when we hear from these people as a society, we will change the way we look at them. We'll change the way we view them, because we will come to realize that, you know what? This could also be me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just lucky. But imagine sometimes you are an employer and you are refusing to hire someone just because they have a criminal record, but their criminal record is of stealing money, but you have maybe also been accepting bribes or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So when you hear their stories, personally from them, we will be able to see them differently, and then it will maybe help us as community members to ease out on the judgment, to ease out on the criticism and look at them as human beings and be willing to support them, because we know that it is so easy to become one of these people.
Mm-hmm.
And when they are supported in, when, let me focus on the you know, the ex-convict diaries.
Mm-hmm.
When you cover more stories of those people,
mm-hmm.
and you really dig deep with them, it will bring so much exposure. It will eventually, you know, bring awareness to the societies. And when it brings awareness, mm-hmm. people will look at them differently and they'll be moved to support them. Some will, you know, meet their potential destiny helpers. Some will be exposed to,
mm-hmm.
you know, people that will come forth and give them sponsorships, for example. Mm-hmm. And I believe we all, as a community, we owe these people, you know, the grace
mm-hmm.
that we all need on a daily basis as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
So schools, you said, communities at large, right?
Mm-hmm.
So schools can maybe focus, integrate mental health
mm-hmm.
in the curriculums, because mental health is really a taboo in most, especially in the Black communities.
Mm-hmm.
It's a taboo, and that is why it's so easy for us to judge these ex-convicts and look at them as monsters, and try to view them outside of the, you know, image of a person, mm-hmm. of a human being that is bound to make mistakes, that is bound to, you know, do wrong. So when we maybe do better as a community,
mm-hmm.
Try to bring more awareness, then I believe it will be easier to support those people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen it also, even just on social media. Social media of how people make fun of people, how yeah. people throw words to people. You just heard that, no, someone was incarcerated. Someone has been in correctional facility. And even just a picture, a person is well dressed up, formal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or just the person is just making a video, trying to find his or her peace.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody out of nowhere will just throw a heavy comment. And then it'll be like, where do people find this kind of confidence to bully others, really?
Yeah.
Where do people find this strength to write something that is really, really, really bad, provoking somebody's spirit? But at the end of the day, you expect this person, is it to rejoice? Is it just to say, well done, thank you? Or what exactly do we expect? Because most of the time, yes, mm-hmm. platforms like this could be introduced, could be implemented, right? Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. we want to create this platform for them to share their stories, right? For them mm-hmm. to come out so that they find their destiny helpers, as you have said it.
Yeah.
And believe me, still, even on the same platform, just this program, just wait. They are going to share their stories.
Yeah.
And they are sharing their stories for a good cause.
Yeah.
Right? For mm-hmm. a good cause. But still, somebody from somewhere will use it against them. So mm-hmm. regarding that, Miss Paulina, how can mm-hmm. we even do extra to encourage ordinary citizens to view ex-convicts with empathy rather than to fear them, to judge them, to throw heavy words to them, you know? How can we do that?
Mm.
How do we do that?
Yeah, that is a good question.
Mm.
And, you know, we always preach, you know, do unto others how you want to receive, or treat others how you want to be treated. And, you know, I'm going to say this because we, in Namibia,
mm-hmm.
I've heard that we are 90% of us are Christian. So, even the Bible tells us that, you know, love is kind. Love believes the best for others. You know, love is not self-seeking.
Mm.
All these things. Now, we want people to be kind to us mm-hmm. when we do wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is why when we apologize to our loved ones, we even cry sometimes, because you are desperate. You want them to understand you.
Mm.
You want them to really just, you know, give you that grace.
Mm-hmm.
But why can't we give that same grace to the next person, to these people that are convicted? Is it because they were convicted? It went to an extent where they were convicted?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In as much as nobody has the right to go around breaking laws, you know, we should understand that we as a society, we as a community, we also somehow play a role mm-hmm. in grooming angry citizens that end up becoming abusers and murderers.
Mm-hmm.
We end up, you know, grooming desperate youths that end up becoming thieves and, you know, all these things that leads them into committing crimes
mm-hmm.
and being convicted.
Mm-hmm.
So in simpler words, most of the times, you know, you find that where there is a criminal or a difficult person or, you know, a person that we love to look at as, you know, the bad guy,
mm-hmm.
there is always a background of pain.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe anger, maybe frustration, maybe desperation.
Mm.
And who contributed to that?
Mm-hmm.
It is us, the members of society.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this child that was, this young man or young girl that was convicted of violence is a young man that grew up watching the father beat up the mother.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually they grew up to become one,
mm-hmm.
an abuser. And when they come back, we want to look at them and criticize them and crucify them and not give them the benefit of the doubt that, no, let's accept him or her. Maybe she or he will change.
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing that somehow, some way, we as a society, we contributed to this.
Mm-hmm.
So we really need to adapt the concept of, you know, like I said earlier on, I mentioned the book, What Happened to You.
Mm-hmm.
We really need to adapt that concept of looking at other people and asking, what happened to you?
Mm.
Hmm? Just take a moment and ask yourself that question. What happened to this person?
Mm.
What led to this person? Instead of looking at the action, or instead of just bashing the person for the action, maybe we should also sometimes take a moment to look at the events that shaped this person.
Mm.
Instead of just judging this person they are today, why don't we maybe look at the events that happened on earlier on? Why don't we maybe, you know, just look at them and be like, oh, okay, so this is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that, you know, this can be changed. With the right guidance, with the right support,
mm-hmm.
you know, I understand. Now I understand you can, but the good thing is it can be changed.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at people as just human beings, we maybe we ought to look at people as just human beings
mm.
and give them that grace, try to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, nothing can ever fully justify criminal behaviors.
Mm.
But we must still give other human beings the grace
mm-hmm.
that we need on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
All right. Miss Paulina, we have been here a long time now and have touched a lot of things. And while we are almost at the closing point, what message would you give to the audience who still doubt that the ex-convict can still change? Because believe me, there are people who still regard people, oh, that person is just like that. Ah, that person will never change. Ah, I knew that person ever since day one. But they will never change. I have known that person for blah blah blah. You know, just placing people just like that. No, that person has been convicted. That person has been in correctional facility for 5 years now. Even if he is back into society now, I don't see that person will change. Or you know, you just know that person for that specific occasion, that specific behavior. But what message would you give to the audience who still doubt that ex-convicts can be can change, can still become better people and live better life or thrive?
Yeah. Okay, so I really love how we are having this conversation at the end of the year.
Mm.
And this is the, I believe most people have already even penned down their end year, you know, New Year resolution.
Mm.
Some have already written down their New Year resolution.
Mm.
Some are busy thinking about their New Year resolution. So the fact that we do that, you do that. I want to address this as if I'm speaking to an individual.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that every year you draw out your New Year resolution, and you really believe to change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in our New Year resolutions, we include so many things. It can be habits.
Mm-hmm.
It can be our attitudes. It can be our financial habits, spending habits,
mm-hmm.
or discipline. And we write down this New Year resolution hoping to change.
Mm-hmm.
And some of us have ticked so many off.
Mm-hmm.
So that is just, you know, a testament that